everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Bow Hunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Huntworth. Huntworth bringing you quality hunting clothing and packs at a price you deserve. Check them out at huntworthgear.com. And right now, they've still got their holiday sale going on. You can get 20% off of anything on the site. Code HLDY20. And I would definitely look into getting the heat boost stuff. So you see me post about it. You heard me talk about it. I just did another, if you go on the website, you'll see me. But I just did another photo shoot with them. And it was mid-20s. Low 30s and 15 or 20 mile an hour wind, and it was just biting cold, you know. That wind was just terrible. It got out of the truck, put that stuff on, and basically for the rest of the day was just absolutely toasty warm. Didn't even really notice it until we started walking around from place to place, and we were like literally sweating, had to take my hat off. It was too much. You know, when I say you can wear that stuff, and the stuff that I'm using is the Saskatoon stuff, so there is a thicker version of that, a warmer version, but definitely something to check out. Go back to the podcast that we did with the Tracy, but it's not a joke. The stuff is very, very impressive and very warm. Again, check it out at huntworthgear.com. No new Patreon updates. Holiday season, not a expendable income type scenario. But, you know, we got to thank everybody that supports the show. Wyatt Beard putting down a doe yesterday in Illinois. And it's his first one, he said, in like 10 years. So congrats, man. Way to get one, you know, as Uncle Frank says, under your belt. We love to hear your success stories, guys. Let us know what's going on with you guys, and we'll share them here on the podcast. And if it's a good enough story, we'll get you on here. Done that many times. So today's podcast, we're going to talk with Josh Ilderton from The Untamed. And, you know, go to their YouTube, and they've got, it's like the best bear hunting video you'll ever watch. Not bow hunting related on that one. They do bears with dogs down in West Virginia, and it's pretty incredible stuff that they do. This podcast, we go through, Josh just killed a great big buck with a bow. Pretty exciting hunt. But we go through, you know, getting kids involved in the outdoors, woodsmanship, what it's like, you know, for hunters, dog hunters, trappers, woodsmen versus like kind of the easy button as far as hunting. Just a great podcast, a little bit long, but I think you guys are really going to enjoy this one. And if you haven't checked out Josh's stuff on The Untamed, definitely go give that a look. And then, check out our Patreon. You know, if you like what we're doing, you like to continue to see great stuff from us. Check that out. It's like 17 cents a day. It helps us out tremendously. We're building the community through our Marco Polo group, and got some bigger things coming for 2023. Looking forward to, you know, kind of taking that next level and giving back more to the Patreons. And with our partners, we don't partner with anybody that doesn't give back. So Huntworth is giving away a full one of their Fairbanks suits, so it's some bibs and some of their warm gear for the late season, and they're giving away a full set of that. Spartan Forge, you know, they've made their name for the artificial intelligence for the deer woods, but you know, they're mapping has become way more than that. Now they have adjustable contour lines. They've got the gradient shading. They've got it so that you can look online and do your e-scouting from your computer. Really stepped their game up there. They give away one of their year-long memberships. And you can check them out at spartanforge.ai. You can use code BOWHUNTER to save 25% on that. Lucky Buck, like I said, we've had the most bucks taken off of our property this year after using it for 1 year. You know causation, correlation, you can make the argument either way, but definitely we're able to see more deer on camera and get an inventory of what was going on up there with the Lucky Buck mineral. They give away a bucket of their mineral. If you're not able to use that, they've got a seed as well. And then our friends over at Zinger Fletchings, they've got a sale going on till this Friday as well. You can check them out. But Zinger's is compression fit fletchings, so they're 3D printed, flexible. They work great, and they're starting to get into arrows if you're following along with them. But they give away a set of their fletchings, you know, just to support the show, just for us. So you can check that out at patreon.com/Bowhunter Chronicles podcast, or you can check it out on our website. But if that's not for you, not a big deal. Just tell someone else about the podcast. Give us a like, a follow on social media somewhere. But as always, every single one of you, thanks for listening. All right, everybody. Adam and John back with another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. And so I don't know if you want to introduce this guest, John, because like this all comes from John, kind of. You know, I'm the guy that does all the work, the business side, and do all the fun stuff, right? Where I got to go talk to people and know everybody. And, you know, John disappears at ATA and he comes back and he's like wiping tears away from his face. And he's like, holy shit, man, you need to, we got to talk to this guy, Josh from the Untamed. So you want to, yeah. That was it? Like,
that's
you,
it. Yeah.
You just talked to him?
Yeah. But no, we'll introduce, like, just how you doing today?
I'm good, dude. I'm excited to be on here to bullshit and tell some stories and talk hunting.
Yeah, the stories you were telling down at ATA, I came back to the booth and my stomach was hurting. I'm like, oh my God, that was some of the funniest shit, like getting chased by wild boars and going down tunnels after bears and shit. I'm like, what? That's like some crazy shit. Or you showed a picture of a mountain lion jumping out of a tree. I'm like, that thing about touched you.
Yeah, could have touched him. Could have touched him for sure.
This guy's got balls the size of church bells, man.
I've heard that before. I don't know if it, but it's just everyday stuff to me. And when I'm talking to people, I think, you know, all woodsmen experience the same shit I do. But they don't. But I always feel like you do. But it's just a difference in hound hunting. Really takes you. It keeps you in the woods, and a lot of shit can happen. And a lot of stories come from it. And the boars and stuff chase me. You know, I poked the bear, and you know it poked back at me harder. So I just got paid for that when I shouldn't have been. Messing with them, but it is what it is.
So before we get into any of that, like, guys right off the bat are like, excuse me, like what is this guy talking about? So what's your background in hunting? Like, where are you from, and like, how did you grow up as far as like getting into hunting, like, off the get?
Yeah, so I grew up in Logan, West Virginia. It's this one of the southern four bow hunting only counties. And pretty much had two guys. My grandfather, I'm come from a divorced family, and my grandfather took me out. We had a farm growing up, and then my mom married a fellow named Red, and I've talked about him before. I just spent deer camp with him. They divorced a couple years afterwards, but he always stayed involved in our lives. And we had another camp that I went with him to and still go. But I mean, I didn't really get serious about hunting until I got out of the Marine Corps. I mean, I hunted in junior high and high school myself, did a lot of squirrel hunting. I mean, I bow hunted, but it wasn't like I was going out to hunt for big bucks. I was going out, if it was brown, it was down. I mean, I was going out there just to kill and eat. And just a lot of self-taught, a lot of mistakes. And then once I got out of the Marine Corps, you know, just it was kind of an escape for me. there for 2 or 3 years after getting out, and I just lived in the woods and every minute I could, and started ground hunting with a buddy of mine, and man, just been doing it ever since. And then we started in Tame back in 18, just to film and have fun. I mean, we had tried it. This is my third go around trying to film and hunt, but been doing that since 18 to just have fun, let people see what we do. West Virginia doesn't get enough credit in the whitetail world for what they produce here, which I'm glad. I mean, but we've showed a lot. I mean, there's a lot of big deer here, but it's that's the big thing, just showing them our lifestyle and what we do here in West Virginia. I mean, we get outside of West Virginia and hunt, but we stay normally right here in the Appalachians and the Ohio Valley, unless I'm mountain lion hunting.
So with that, we got some listeners and I got some questions here from West Virginia guys, but then I've heard like from other guys that say there's parts of, and this is kind of like what I was telling you before the podcast, before we started recording, West Virginia to me seems like the Appalachians, right? Like it seems like, you know, like you're the name Untamed beyond the critters is kind of like the people, from an outsider looking in. And they've said there's places there in the bow hunting only, might look good on a map, but you can't go there. The locals don't want your out of state plates. They don't want any of that. Yeah, I mean, so.
The locals can be tough. I mean, but that's the whole thing with the name Untamed is, it's not just the hunting. It's all of us just being untamed, that whole lifestyle of taking risk and taking chances and just grinding and not sleeping and, you know, just go, 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 whether it's with our family, with the hunting, with work. It's just that's where the name come from, is just that grind that every day that we do. Yeah, I mean, is there rough areas? Yeah, but I mean, hell, there's rough areas in New York.
There's some pretty rough areas in Ohio too that we've been through.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean, they're everywhere. I mean, are people very protective of the bow hunting only counties? Yeah, they are. But one I have noticed since we've been videoing and on YouTube, I mean, we've sold a lot of non-resident licenses and rented a lot of hotel rooms and cabins, and who knows how much these guys have spent on the, you know, all the supplemental cost of eating and stuff like that. So it doesn't bother me one bit, people coming in and hunting. I think that's what part of what we're here for, is to show West Virginia off.
So when you say you have four counties that bow hunting only, that's the only, I mean, nothing else.
Yeah. You can, so there, 55 counties in the state, and there's four southern, they call them the Southern Four. It's bow hunting only. Now you're allowed to gun hunt for bears and wild boar.
Okay.
But no gun hunting for whitetail.
And then is there any, what's your, is there restrictions for antler points, or is there?
It's a one buck limit.
One buck limit. Okay.
Yeah. And they added a doe a few years back, so you can kill a buck and a doe if you buy an extra stamp. But if you don't buy an extra stamp, you're one deer in those counties.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're killing deer that are, you know, most of the deer I'd say on average in the Southern Four are minimum 5 years old.
Wow.
I mean, there's some 2 and 3 year olds killed, but everybody here is hunting with a purpose, you know, to kill a good buck.
Right.
So I would say, I don't know that from a scientific data, but I would say it's 4 or 5 years old is probably your average age for those counties. And that's why it's so good. I mean, is it rougher than hell? Yes. It's terrible terrain. But it's fun as hell to hunt them.
So I want to get into the hunting of those deer and that kind of stuff. But like, what's the, like for those counties in particular, like what's the deer density like? Because that's one of the things where, you know, even in like, you know, Southeast Ohio or whatever, when you get into areas where the deer density isn't that great and the terrain's tough as hell, like, yeah, there's big bucks, but man, is it, you know, disheartening a lot of times to go and like not see anything and just work your butt off. And, you know,
oh, you're going to have days like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've hunted Southeast Ohio too, in that big country in there, and you'll have those days. I mean, but you might go days and you might see 20 or 30 deer, you know, if I'm running and kind of glassing and then jumping to another area to glass, I might see, you know, there are days I don't see none doing it, which is, those are really, really bad days when you're glassing and you don't see no deer. But then there'll be days that I might see 30 or 40 deer, in the that morning or evening hunt or an all day hunt. You know, it just depends. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, Adam. I know that you'll see some does, and if you see a buck, chances are he's going to be a good buck. That's kind of how it is.
And so what's the like terrain, like the area as far as like, cause down where we were hunting in Southeast Ohio, there was a lot of like clear cuts. And then some of the area was like that reclaimed coal property. Right. So,
yeah.
You know, big CRP and then, you know, mixed woods here and greenbrier for days and days and days.
Yeah. I mean, the mine lands that we hunt, they're on top of the mountains, and, you know, the mountains been removed and then put back. It's kind of like, I call it like prairie land. It just kind of rolls, and it's autumn olives and CRPs type stuff and grasses. You know, once it has 4 or 5 years of growth, it just got grass for, you know, first few years. But, and then, you know, you get into your timber right at the coal seam, because that's where they mine down to the coal seam. And so they get into big timber below that. But it's always, you know, everything's so damn steep down here. I mean, you can see from one side of the holler to the other. It just takes you forever to go down to the drain and go back up the other side. there's big timber, hardwoods. But then you get into your open areas too, and you can move. I mean, it's all different elevations and kind of rolls. It's not just flat up on top.
And so when you're hunting that, how are the deer using that area? And like, what are the key like terrain features or like, you know, things that you key in on, like when you're setting your cameras or like when you're doing your glassing?
Really, when I'm glassing, I'm just trying to figure out where they're feeding or where they're coming through. There's certain areas that I might be between their feeding and bedding, and I'm glassing in between just getting their movement. But it's hard to explain, because if the maps aren't updated, you know, on X or whatever you use, if the maps aren't updated once the mining comes through, you can be looking at your terrain. It's just pointer for anybody that comes down there and hunts. You'd be like, man, I'm going to go hunt this low gap right here. And you go out there, and that low gap's gone. It got blasted back in 2015. But, you know, when I'm ground hunting, I know the terrain I'm in because I've hunted it for so many years now. But like, I'm always looking for places to give me the best vantage point to see as much as I can see. But then I got to be able to move too. And sometimes I do, I run right at them, you know, but most of the time I'm using terrain as cover for my movement. I mean, because it just, as long as, and the wind, I mean, the wind swirls so bad here And I mean, it swirls bad everywhere, but it's like, it's terrible here in the mountains. But I don't know. It's hard to explain because it's the shit's not the same as it is on your map. But like, I key on the same stuff that you all key in on. If I know that there's a choke point or a pinch point, then I might put a camera there. I might not. I don't run very many cameras. Most of my cameras are just for inventory. Now I got extremely lucky this season because I put a camera up, found two big scrapes one evening and put a camera up, and the summit gun come in there that next morning, and I went in that evening and killed him. But it was a hot area. I mean, that's the hottest shit I've seen in a long time. But it was in a choke point, you know, in a pinch point, two different pinch points in one area, and it was just fire. But I look for the same stuff. I mean, if you when we're glassing, like we're glassing hundreds of acres at a time. So if we see a deer over here or over here, everything's going to change depending on where we catch them. It's kind of fly by the seat of your pants.
So
if you know,
yeah. So when you say you're ground hunting, are you kind of like spot and stalk, or how kind of explain how your method of ground hunting works?
So most of the time, you know, I just sit and glass, and if I feel like the deer is telling me that, you know, he's comfortable or he's feeding or whatever, you know, I might go after him. I might see if he's going to bed, if the conditions are right to make a move. And then, so that's kind of the glass and the spot and stalking. And I might not make a move at all. I might just sit there, and I do a lot of observation sits of just glassing to be able to try to make a move over the next couple of days. Okay. But then if we're ground hunting in the timber, I mean, it's just a slow and tedious hunt. And I'm actually just kind of ground hunting and glassing and, you know, making some calls. And I did good this year with it. You know, I killed that deer of a tree, but I was on a bunch of deer the couple of weeks before ground hunting and, you know, using ghillie suits, and, you know, had got up on several deer, just not any shooter bucks. But it's just the slow, you know, when I'm ground hunting in the timber, I'll just go from point to point or from viewing area to viewing area.
Okay.
It's kind of like if I'm on a point, I'll glass as much as the drains as I can up and down, and then glass them again, then glass them again, because, you know, deer just hide. And then once I find, you know, once I convince myself that there's no deer there, then I'll move to where I left off glassing.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep. And it's almost like a Western style hunt, kind of.
Yeah. I've never hunted out there, but that's what several people have said it reminds them of that have come down and hunted with me.
Yeah, it's the way you're explaining it. It's like what we, you know, almost like our elk hunt and then, you know, right, mule deer hunting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what Bo Martonic, he's come down and hunted with me a couple of times. And he's like, dude, you'd love it out west. And he said, it's the same thing. But I ain't never done it.
So that's, you know, like when you think of West Virginia, I'm thinking of mountains and like big timber, you know, like our spot in Ohio, you know. Mm. But like after we went out west, I'm like, that kind of wrecked me for whitetail hunting here in Michigan, because I'm like, you know, I've done it my whole life. You know, we go out, we find sign, and then just sit, you know. And like out west, it was just like, you can make something happen. you're just out there glassing and then trying to, you know, put a move on them or, you know, calling, whatever. But it's like, it's not just a static, you know, it's a dynamic.
I mean, that's the thing. And it's like everybody's been taught just to go out, find your tree, find your stump, clean it out, find your place to sit on the ground, get up in the tree, sit there until deer come by.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's kind of, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it, you know, my grandfather told me that a bunch. Don't move. Stay right here and just look for deer, you know. But, and that's okay, I think, in the right situation. But I like trying to, I like trying to make opportunities.
Right.
You know, I don't think, even if you bump deer, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I mean, if you're aggressive out of 10 hunts, you're going to get an opportunity. One of those aggressive moves, it's going to pay off.
Yeah.
Is how I think. So I always try to make an opportunity. I'm not going to let, if I'm in an area and I know deer are coming through and there's, you know, a hot doe in there, hot does, and or good feeding, you know, if I know they're in these oaks, then yeah, I'll hang up and I'll sit right there and wait. But if not, then I'm just constantly on the move trying to find them and create an opportunity.
Well, and that's, you know, I hunted this year, I've hunted quite a bit more off the ground hunting in CRP. And I just recently picked up my longbow and took it out for a couple hunts and have been carrying that little thing around. And the other day I was sitting on the edge of this field where the deer usually come out and then they cross this ditch, and I was set up right on the ditch. Well, there were 70 freaking turkeys out there that worked their way to me. And they were about 60, 70 yards away, and there wasn't any deer out in the field. And we were about an hour before dark, maybe 45 minutes. And I'm like, there's no deer going to get through them turkeys to me before it gets dark. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to move, you know? And, I didn't get another situation where I didn't get drawn, but I got an opportunity where I could have killed a doe, you know, had things went right. But if I'd have just sat right there, I'd have just watched turkeys fly up to roost and then I'd got out of there. And
you're eating it.
Yeah. And that would have been it. So that's one of the things hunting on the ground for me lately has been, I'm not very patient. Like when I'm on the ground though, that's the hard part. I'm a little bit too agitated. I feel like I move around in the tree, but I pick trees, you know, where you got some cover and you can do stuff and you get a little way with a little bit more stuff. But man, especially in that CRP and stuff, them deer can sneak right up on you. And it's like, I've been busted way more. And like, so now I just need to start moving or like making a decision of like, okay, I need to hide better or something. But the getting up and moving, you're right. I mean, for all those times I could have just sat there and, you know, had there been a tree there, I would have sat there all day because I wouldn't want to pack my stuff up and get down and move over. But I was like, well, I got time to make a move. I'm going to do it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and just like you're hunting at CRP and they can sneak up on you, but, you know, you don't have to worry about being completely silent. I think noise is good as long as they can't see the noise. And the movements aren't, you're not, you know, those jerky movements. And, you know, I think slow movement and noise is good sometimes. I mean, it'll entice deer to come and look and see what the heck's going on. So I'm not, like, I try to be quiet when I'm on, you know, walking. But, like, I'm not, I used to be, like, I get pissed if I broke a twig or anything. And now, you know, some noise is okay. And I mean, I think you can entice some deer, especially hunting like CRP, that thick grass, when you can get down in it. I mean, you can get deer 4 or 5 yards from you and that stuff, man. It's fun to hunt, but it's hard to shoot in. But you can make noise in that stuff because they can't see you either. Right. They're just, are they going to be alert? Yeah, but if you're, as long as you're not like just stomping through, you know, you can move on deer there too. I mean, I've done it in Ohio. Jay and I were hunting more to the western Ohio, and I told him it was like 6 years ago before we even started Untamed, and I told him, I said, I'm just going to hunt on the ground. He's like, dude, nobody in Ohio hunts on the ground. You got to get in a tree. Like, well, I'm going to go on the ground. You know, I'm going to learn some shit. If I don't see any deer, I'm going to learn to train anyway. And I ended up telling him, I was like, hey, you're going to end up having an 8-point. He's working up his draw. I've watched him get up his bed, and I saw all kinds of deer. And he's like, dude, he said, and then ended up that evening, he was in a tree line on a hedgerow, and I come out of this CRP, and I was like, hey, man, there's a big buck over here in that little patch of sycamores. And he was sitting there glassing, watching me stalk up to that deer in that sycamore, and I was in a cut cornfield at that point, and they were just a patch of sycamores, and he was bedded away from me. And I about killed that big son of a gun. And so from that point on, Jay was like, man, you know, I'm gonna get on the ground too. And you know, since then he's killed a couple bucks on the ground, and it's just a great way to make things happen, in my opinion. You're gonna make a lot of mistakes. You're gonna blow a lot of opportunities. I mean, just this week here, been hunting with Zach, you know, because we're all tagged out trying to get him a deer. Well, he's a great hunter. He can find big bucks. But he's normally a tree stand guy or a saddle guy. You know, he's in a tree. But we ground hunted Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And we were talking last night, and he had a rough week, man, of hunting. I mean, we were on some deer. He missed a, you know, 150-inch 8-point. On Thursday, and then we saw some deer Friday morning and saw a decent deer, but we decided to not go after him. But then we spotted some wild boar, and we ground hunted into them, and you know, shit can get real intense fast when you're getting in amongst them hogs. And he shot and missed another hog, and he's like, yes, I don't know about this ground hunting. He said, my shot process has to happen so much faster. And that's the thing, is like, you're going to make it. I told him, I was like, dude, first year you really hunted on the ground, you're going to make a lot of mistakes, but you're going to learn a lot. You learn, for one, you learn about the terrain. Two, you learn how those animals, what their signals they're giving off, what you can and can't do, their mood or, you know, whatever. And then being able to go through your shot process, because, you know, when you're in a tree, you're like, okay, I'm going to draw, I'm going to anchor, pin, steady, shoot. That it's the same process on the ground, but it's just going to have to happen a whole lot faster. You got to calculate that way faster, let it go through, because you're not getting those crisp, clean shots that you've got shooting lanes out of your tree, and you know, you have to find a shot. So he's learning, you know, it's a struggle, but I mean, once you do it, I think that everybody gets hooked on it.
When I did a podcast with Zach from the Hunting Public recently.
Yeah.
A couple months ago. And you know, I've talked to Zach a whole bunch, and we were talking about like kind of like gear and what guys, you know, if they were just starting out, like what's the one piece of gear or whatever. But he said, you know, with all of our talk of saddles and tree stands, he's like, if someone was just getting into it, they should be hunting on the ground for just about everything you just said, so that they could learn and make mistakes, but then they could get close, see how the deer use these areas. And then it'd be a lot easier to kill one from a tree once you've been, you know, eyeball to eyeball with one a few times.
That's exactly right. If you learn what they're naturally doing, I mean, you can go get in a tree and they're not going to be off their game, they're going to continue doing what they're doing as long as they don't get bumped or spooked or anything like that. I mean, I agree with him 100%. You know, I don't think to get started, you need all this shit that everybody uses.
I mean, well, with Zach, you probably need the hair. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He's got a natural ghillie suit head.
I was going to ask you, like, so I watched a few videos, and some of I wanted to go back and watch some of the earlier videos, because, like, when I go back and listen to, like, our first, like, 10 podcasts, I'm like, oh, my God, this is just, oh, my gosh, it's terrible. And watching you guys run around in the ghillie suits, and you killed or you shot a couple bucks, looks like you didn't recover the one. But that was what I was going to ask you. Like, those ghillie suits on the ground, do you think that that's, like, the way to go? And how does that impede your shooting?
I do. I'm a firm believer in them. That, and I made mine. I've got a homemade one. So I don't have, you know, I made it to where I sewed canvas on the inside of my arms. So nothing hangs on my arms. And nothing, I don't hardly have anything on my front side either, except a little bit. So string or nothing can catch. I think the big thing with the ghillie suit is it just makes you, it makes your outline out of proportion. You know what I mean?
Right,
you don't have this.
Breaks your silhouette up.
Yeah, you don't have this solid shape. You know, you just have this blob out there, you know. And I don't, I think, we used them this year. Just, we didn't put a video out because the days that we did, I mean, we just didn't have a whole lot of action other than, you know, a four corn and a 6 point and a few does. But now we got a few clips that we're going to use for reels on these does and 6 point. I mean, they're just as, you know, wondering what we are so bad. I mean, they come 6-7 yards and then they don't even run off. They kind of just feed away. I'm a firm believer in them. Sometimes they're aggravating, but they work. I mean, I'm a firm believer in that they work.
And you said that you've tried a couple times to do the filming thing and, you know, this is the one. How has it changed, like, your hunting, like, mentality? Because that's one of the things, like, for me in particular, because I do, like, all the social media stuff. Like, I do so much shit shooting my bow and, you know, messing with my gear, checking trail cameras, hunting, all this stuff. And, like, I don't post half of it because it makes it feel like I'm doing it for the wrong reasons. You know what I mean? Like, there's a big struggle with, like, hunting for myself and doing it and then sharing it. Like, how has that journey, like, been for you?
I love having the camera there. The camera has fouled up some hunts for sure. You know, you got twice as much scent, twice as much movement. You know, you could have twice as much noise because you got all the extra gear, all the camera stuff. I love doing it. My son gets aggravated with it because for me, if it's not on camera, I don't shoot. That's one thing that sucks. Like, for my son, if I'm filming him, or one of the camera guys is filming him, like, I've told him, don't worry about the camera. You get out there and do your thing and kill stuff and learn to hunt. You know, he's just starting to hunt on his own this year. And so I don't worry about it because I don't want him to feel that pressure, because getting content can create a lot of mistakes. The pressure, if you're having a rough season and you're not getting any content, good content, like, it'll force you into making mistakes if you ain't careful. I mean, it's happened with us, and we've had to kind of take a seat back and go, hey, let's just do our thing. It'll happen. That opportunity, if we stay out there, that opportunity will happen. But I mean, 2 days after I killed my buck and Logan, I was hunting my farm in Putnam County. And I should have killed, you know, this buck before gun season come in. And I had him at 25 yards. And we had some camera difficulties. And he got away. I mean, that's the kind of, do I get pissed? Yeah, hell yeah, I get pissed. Because, I don't know how I want to get it on film, but I put a lot of time in. I want to kill something. You know, I like killing shit. I ain't afraid to say it. I mean that, you know, and the camera, it will foul stuff up, but I mean, it's a blast doing. And for me, like, not to come off the wrong way, but like, we got to have people view our stuff for our partners and stuff, but like, I don't care if anybody watches my stuff, because when my son's 80 and he's got great, great grandkids, he's going to be able to say, look at your great, great, great grandfather, that crazy son of a bitch crawled in this borehole.
Yeah. I feel the same way. Like when we started this, like it was just, you know, us having fun or doing whatever. And my father-in-law is a riot, and he's done it all and been there. And there's a huge legacy piece there, like for my daughter, you know, to be like, here's the stories to hear your grandfather tell them, to see that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think about it for me, cause it's like, I'm just like, ah, your dad messed this up and he messed that up and he did this wrong and all that stuff. Yeah. But it's always going to be there. So that was another thing I was going to ask you, like, how is it bringing your son along for the ride and, you know, getting to share those memories and record them and all that?
You know, I've been able to learn, not learn, but there's stuff that seasoned hunters, I think we all take for granted. And then, and as Brody has hunted with me, he asks questions or he'll screw up and he'll move for his bow or he'll try to stand up in his tree stand because he just started hunting out of a saddle this year. But it's all the little things that, like, we just take for granted. Like, you know, we know not to make any movement if the deer's around, but him asking the little questions brings up so much stuff, and it kind of, you kind of go into recall mode and be like, oh, this is why we do it. And, you know, and it's been great. I mean, watching him come up, I don't put a lot of pressure on him to hunt. You know, we went to deer this year. He's never got to go to deer camp. We've hunted on our farm the last 4 years just because of that content pressure that I was telling you about. We got to get that content. And if we were low on content, we need to be glass. We wouldn't gun hunt. We'd be spotting, stalking down in Logan, glassing, trying to find deer. And so Brody's never got to experience a traditional deer camp. You know, I learned so much about life at deer camp. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I started going to deer camp when I was 12 maybe, and didn't care if I killed anything back then. It was all about just deer camp, you know, just eating, talking, bullshitting, telling stories, listening. You know, we weren't allowed to talk at deer camp much. You know, we had pretty much told just sit back and listen. But so like this year we went to deer camp and Brody got to experience the whole thing. I took the camera and I was filming, but like, I really wasn't even focused on it. Like, I didn't care if we got a video or not. I just wanted him to enjoy those 4 days at deer camp. So sometimes I just say, to hell with it. It's not the right time. I want him to enjoy this piece without the camera, without anything. And that's what we'll do. Because I don't want him to feel that pressure for him to go, you know what, I don't want to go out and hunt, you know, because I don't want that damn camera in my face.
Great.
And so we just don't do it. But he, there are days that we, that he doesn't, he don't bother him. But if it's bothering him, I just say, hey, let's just go out and have fun. Let's just go hunt. And that's kind of how I deal with it, you know.
Yeah, and you don't want him to be like, this is like one of Dad's jobs, right? Like, oh, yeah, we got to go do this. We have to do it. Like, you want him to be, like, pumped to go out and do it. And, like, I've been dealing with that. My daughter, like, for the last couple of years, she's like, I want to go to, and she's seven, but do the youth hunt. And we got a private farm. My buddy's got all set up for her. And, we'll go and try and shoot the gun. She's like, oh, I don't want to do it. Like, she's like, she's so sweet. She's like, why can't I use my bow? And I'm like, well, it's not strong enough, honey. Yeah. But she's like, I don't like shooting the gun. And I'm like, all right, well, we're just not going to go. And she's like, well, I don't want you to be mad. I'm like, I don't care whether you go or not. Don't go, you know, it doesn't matter to me. And last year we went up to our deer camp after Thanksgiving. And this year she's just like, it was too long of a drive. I don't want to drive up there. And she's like, I don't want you to be upset. I'm like, if you don't want to go, I'm not going to like make it like something that you're, you know, dreading or like make you not like hunting because you don't want to go and I'm forcing you to do something, you know? But
I think kids are, and from my perspective, I think it's important to get kids involved, but not force them to be involved. I mean, Brody's bear hunted with me. He went to his first tree when he was 3 years old. He's probably seen 100 bears in a tree. He's never killed one. Has no interest in it, but he loves the dogs. You know what I mean? Hmm. And then he's killed deer. He killed deer when he was 5, 6, 7 years old, and then he quit. You know. And I was like, hey, you want to go? I'll wake you up. And if I go in there and he says, hey, I'm tired, I want to sleep, I say, okay, babe, I'll see you in a while. But if he, you know, I'll go in and say, hey, I'll be in the garage getting ready. And if he's out there in 5 minutes getting ready, then we go hunting. And it doesn't bother me one way or the other. Or if he says, you know, we're supposed to hunt on Saturday, and he says, hey, let's go, can we go do this? We just go do that. And then, so that's kind of how I've always brought him up hunting. Like, I love hunting, but I never wanted to force it on him. And then when COVID started, you know, he was out of school that first spring, and it was kind of just disarray. The school was trying to get everything online. And we hunted every day, except for 4 days, turkey hunting. In Virginia, Ohio, and West Virginia. We would drive as a half a tank of fuel. We'd drive and then drive back that day. And he hunted with me every day. We'd go to Virginia. We'd get up at 2:30 in the morning. And he missed two that year and then had probably 7 or 8 other opportunities. And like, that was like the turning point. And then come that fall, he started bow hunting a little bit, but it was the same thing. His bow just wasn't powerful enough. So he gun hunted, killed a deer. And then like that next turkey season come in and like he was raring to go because he wanted to get some redemption. And he finally killed his first bird, you know, that next year. And then, but now he's like, it's like ate up with it. And then this year he started hunting by himself. You know, he turned 14 this summer. So I let him start getting in the saddle, you know, going out and gun hunting by himself. And he's ate up with it now. And it's just like, I'm just like, yes. You know, I didn't foul it up, you know, kind of like parents in sports and forcing their kids to play stuff and burning them out. And it's always a balancing act with them. For me and Brody, it had been, I'm not speaking for all parents. I'm just saying how I went about it. And it seems like it's worked out, especially for somebody like me that loves the outdoors so much.
Well, I think anything with putting like pressure on the kids and you know, for me, having a daughter, it was like a struggle internally. Like, I'm going to try to put, you know, I want to almost was like the other way. Like, I don't want to pressure her so much. But what I've realized is that, like, kind of like what you were talking about with like the untamed, like, or whatever, like, this is just how we live. Like, so, you know, she's out there grabbing antlers and cutting up deer. And, you know, my father-in-law, we were talking about how he fishes a lot, and, you know, he's, you know, cleaning a limit of perch, and her job is to scoop the guts from the time she was 4 years old, to take the guts from here and put them in the bucket. Didn't matter that it was gross or that they were fish, or that they were dead. No, her job is to take the guts and put them in the bucket. Like, you want to be out in the garage with grandpa, you're scooping guts. Like,
that's right.
But you'd mentioned the bears, and that, you know, you got the, like, I don't know what the title of the video is, like, the best bear video you'll ever see, or whatever. And, you know, I'd seen that one before, but I rewatched it, and it's like, how in the world, like, how do you get into that? And then all these dogs and like that. I mean, that seems just like a freaking, like, bear hunt aside, like, just a chaotic kind of party, like, with your buddies. Like, we're going to go, we're going to drive these two tracks, we're going to let some dogs go. Maybe we find a bear, maybe we don't, right?
It's a, bear hunting is a social hunt. You don't have to worry about camouflage. You don't have to worry about scent control. You don't have to worry about noise, you know. And, you know, everybody loves dogs. And I got into it, you know, and I went on my first bear hunt with hounds in 99. I got out of the Marine Corps that spring and went that fall with a group. And I hunted 7 or 8 years before I even got my own dogs. But then once you get your own dogs, it you know, you got skin in the game. It's a different feeling of just helping and hunting and tracking than having your own dogs. It's another level. And then, so I've been doing that since, I don't know, 07. You weren't allowed to bear hunt with dogs in the Southern Four until, I think, 08. 07 or 08, you started allowing, the bear population just blew up, and they let us start hunting with dogs. And it's just a good time. I mean, and I've said it before, I mean, it's so easy to get kids involved. And then when we're bear hunting, every kid comes with it. Whoever's hunting with us that day, I mean, kids come. I mean, it's, and then it's really easy to expose everybody to dogs and when you get them in a tree. But, like, you know, on the ground, you know, you're kind of going into protective mode. But it's a blast. I mean, and you learn a lot about woods. You know, when you were bear hunting, I mean, you're covering a lot of damn ground, and you're learning a lot. You're seeing a lot. I mean, Zach, perfect example. Zach killed a booner 6-7 years ago, and he had a couple of dogs. We had treated a family of bears, and his dogs were on like a cub. And he went up there to get his dogs and jumped this buck out of his bed. But the buck didn't know it was him. He just jumped because of noise. And they weren't treed 50 yards from that deer. But he saw the buck, got his dogs, left, went back in there. I think he killed him like 5 or 6 days later. And you just learn so much about terrain. It just helps you all around. I've slowed way down with it. Bear season actually comes in tomorrow, until the end of the year. And I'll probably get out. I usually hunt every day, but I've been focusing on deer hunting because that's kind of what Brody has been focused on. And, I'll hunt 8 or 10 times. You know, it's the dynamics of our bear hunting group have changed since the Untamed went through some changes. with people. So it, and I've enjoyed bow hunting. I mean, I've started focusing more on bow hunting these last couple of years, and that's what I wanted to do anyhow. Kind of got burned out on hound hunting because, I mean, I was doing it relentlessly. I mean, running every chance I could get.
So as like the hound hunting and like the you said it's a whole nother thing when you got skin in the game, but like I think of it as like those guys, whether it's, you know, running coons or like whatever, but you've gone from a participant, right, to a houndsman, right? Yeah. So what is that like learning process? Like how are you training up these dogs and dealing with them? And then at the end of the day, when you got, you know, a few sets of dogs and a bunch of guys and you tree a bear, like how do you choose the shooter? Like the one bear comes flying out of the freaking coal mine and like pow 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 pow, yeah, rifles going off, all sorts of shit. Like who claims this thing?
Well, the one come out of the hole, I killed it. It's actually laying right here. He's sitting here laying beside me on a rug. Most of the time, you got a pecking order with your group. And then once you get to the tree, if you have guests or if you have kids, they're the priority. And if you have guests with you, you know, if I bring somebody and we get to the tree and the guys with the hounds will talk and go, hey, you know, John Doe's going to shoot this one. We kind of just talk about it and decide. If it's in a tree, if it's on the ground, then most likely one of us is going to be the shooter. Or if it's an experienced hunter, we might be like right in his ear telling him, ho, 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 you know, and showing, telling him when he can or can't shoot. You know, bear hunting, it's any type of, and not bear hunting, any type of hound hunting is expensive as hell. The dogs, the food, the medicines, the vet bills, tracking collars, you know, handhelds, radios, you know, it's endless. And then it's very hard because bear hunting groups or hound hunting groups, I don't think it's as hard with coon hunters because they're like, yeah, just come on, bring your dog and let's go hunting. Well, bear hunting groups and, you know, mountain lion groups, they're tight knit. Like you're not going to let very many outside houndsmen come hunt with you. One, because you might come hunt with me and bring your hounds. And then next thing, you might be going back in that area next week with your hounds without us, you know. And hate to be that way, but it's cutthroat, and you just don't want to. We've been through it. I mean, we've let guys come with their hounds, and the next thing you know, they're hunting the land we hunt, and it just didn't work out. So to get into it, you can train your dogs. But it's much easier to train them when you're with experienced bear hunters and experienced bear dogs to put your dogs in there with them. And then as they get going, then you can continue working with them. And then, you know, you can do your own thing. But you got to have the right dogs. And it's a process, man. I mean, I've been through a lot of dogs in the past 15 years. I've had a lot of shit eaters, but you know, got a pretty good pack of dogs now. I don't have many dogs. I used to keep about 12 hounds, and I've only got 5 now. But it's a great sport. It gets a black eye, but it's a great sport, and the states that still allow it, they keep their predator population down. And the states that don't allow it, they're having a lot of issues, you know, and we protect everybody else in the outdoor industry, in my opinion. because everybody picks on the, you know, everybody picks on the hounds because it's easy. We're just like easy bait for people to bash, because, you know, they're the, you know, your hound hunters aren't out there and Sitka gear or Kuyu or whatever the hell, you know, they're out there and, you know, overalls and they're rednecks and hillbillies and they're just good old boys just out there hunting and running their dogs. And, it, you know, it's not that aesthetic look that the outdoor industry wants. And then it's easy for outside interest groups to target. So I think that, you know, I think houndsmen and dog hunters protect a lot of the other hunting because they take a lot of the heat from the outside interest groups. And I don't understand how other hunters don't see that and support hound hunters.
Right.
Well, how did that, like,
sense?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. But from the other hunter perspective or whatever, like, how does, and I know you said that Zach had killed a Booner, basically learning like where the deer, that deer yeah. was, but like, how does that affect like the deer? Like, so do you run dogs for bears in the same areas that you hunt, or do you kind of?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
So yeah. It doesn't affect your deer hunting at all?
I've posted videos of deer walking within 5 yards of my dog lot, and my dogs don't say a word. You know, they're just not. Now, are there houndsmen out there that have dogs that run deer? Sure there is. My dogs will probably run a deer if it's a buck and he's got a heavy scent. It's a rut. But I'm going to know if my dogs are running deer, and I'm going to correct that action. You know what I mean? You can tell on your tracking device of what animal your dogs are running, you know, whether it's a coyote, a bear, a bobcat, a mountain lion, a deer, they all run their type of track. And you can see that. So we have dogs that, I mean, I'm not saying that my dogs will not run a deer, because they will. They're gamey dogs. I mean, they're not running anything. They might strike on a deer. But do I worry about hurting my deer hunting, bear hunting in the same place? No, I don't.
Now,
even if they bump a deer out, that deer's gonna be back in there.
Now, like, from the shooting them on the ground type thing, like, that was one thing watching the videos. I mean, it's like you guys are standing there and there's like some huge bears, like within, like, you could hit them with a stone. And you're like, yeah, on the radio, like, yeah, he's going up this way. It's like, if that was a deer, like, if that was a big old buck, you know, it would be like freaking World War III, just lighting him up with a pistol, rifle, whatever you had, you know. But like you said, there's a guy in some Wranglers with a ball yeah. cap on, and he's like, yeah, he's headed up towards you. I think, you know, you're up on that road. Like, yeah, he'll be up there in a minute. And I'm like, that's yeah. a huge bear. That would be a trophy. Like, what's going on there? Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, most of the guys with the dogs ain't interested in killing the bear. We'll kill bear. We'll be there for safety shots. And if the bear is being mean or something, but we're not even interested in it. I mean, I caught two in the early season. Let both of them go. I'm just not interested. I mean, I'd rather tree and free them than I would kill them and fool with them. Because I don't eat them. We get them butchered and give them to a mission. Because I don't eat bear meat. So I mean, I'm not going to waste it. And I'm out there just for my dogs. You know, that's, and most of the guys with dogs, that's how they feel.
So, you know, one of the stories that you told me down at ATA was you guys went in after a bear into one of the coal mines or so. Can you tell?
Oh, yeah. We've done that a few times. Yeah. I mean, sometimes they'll go in auger holes, which auger hole is, you know, it's usually a 24, 36 inch hole, and then it'll go back. It just goes straight in and straight back out. There's no cross cuts. And there'll be some holes are 300 foot long. Some of them are, can be up 700-800 feet. And, you know, we've gone in them holes before. And, you know, your dogs are in there. You're in there with a pistol and a headlamp. You got a rope tied to your ankle so the people outside can pull you out fast enough.
Jeez.
It can, yeah, I mean, shit can get hairy. And then you get into, we've gone into a couple of, like, deep mines. And so there's cross cuts, you know, when they go into the mine, they drive forward, say, north and south. But it, so every so many feet, they got to go east and west. And we got in the mine there one day, and we had our headlamps, and we could hear the dogs coming, and the bear would come through right past us, and then the bear would run past us again, going north and south, and then he'd go hit a cross cut east and west, and hell, you didn't know where it, if it, some bitch was going to hit you or what. And but we've been, I've gone in auger holes, and the webbing between the holes has fell out, you know, because it's a small webbing that they keep in there just for the machine, but bumped a bear completely in the next auger hole. And it's, I've seen their paws coming out, you know, trying to dig. And next thing you know, they crawl out and, you know, you're standing 5 feet from them. You could slap them with a stick. But they're fun. I mean, they're like any other animal. I mean, they're just trying to get away. You know, they can get aggressive sometimes.
So, I mean, I'm just trying to, like, I think about, like, fishing and boating and stuff that just is like this money hole that you just keep throwing money into, right? So you don't like to eat bear. You don't really like to kill them. And you said all this stuff is, like, super expensive. And now you've got a rope tied to your foot and you're crawling into a hole for this creature that you don't really, you know, what?
You and your buddy's dogs are in there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because you're saying, like, going in with the gun and all of a sudden you got the dog and you got to pull him over and get him out. Next thing you know, you got the bear, right?
Yeah, and he's right there in your face, you know, and the dogs are trying to get past you to get to the bear again. You know, that's what they're for.
Oh, but I'm just trying to figure out the motivation of, like, why you get started.
Like, oh, it's a damn hoot.
I mean,
it's a blast.
I mean, you... to love the dogs, and, like, I can see that, you know, why you'd want to go out there, because the dogs just love it. You know, I mean, that's their purpose in life, is to, like, you know, do what you want them to do and then, you know, get on that bear. But man, what, I don't know that I'd be crawling in the hole. I'd probably crawl in the hole for my dog, but
it's all situational. I mean, some holes we don't go in. We just wait it out. But some we do, and some, you know, other crevices we go in, some we don't, you know. But, like, it's the same thing with mountain lion. I've killed one mountain lion. I'd probably kill another one because I like to eat them. You know, they're good to eat. But they're, that animal is fun as hell to catch. I mean, they're a fun and an evasive animal to hunt, you know. And I just like running them. You know, that's the only two gonna catch that groundhog. If they drop it on a raccoon track an hour later, they're gonna catch that raccoon. I mean, they call them meat dogs. I mean, that's how they've trained them. Whatever they put track they put them on is what they're gonna catch. And you know, I run bear and mountain lion. That's it. They run bobcats, raccoon, bear, mountain lion, you know, whatever they put them on. It's fun. It's fun to watch. If, you know, getting started, you're probably going to have to buy a couple started dogs that have been bear hunting. But, like, if you bring a pup up and you go from, you know, the litter to that dog progressing and getting to his first tree or starting his first bear or sitting on the wood and he's treeing. I mean, it's a proud moment. It's like, hey, yeah, man, he's doing good. He's coming around. And that's where you just get it, where it's kind of just your training and stuff pays off. And that's where you get your reward, is when you see these dogs coming along from litter to making a good dog.
So do these, the meat dog guys, or I guess even in West Virginia, in general, like, can you hunt deer with dogs too? Do they do that there?
No.
Okay. So like that's, I know they do it in Virginia and like North Carolina, yeah. South Carolina. Yeah,
big down south.
Yeah. But not deer there.
No.
And then so for these guys, what I was going to say is like these guys that run these meat dogs, it seems like, you know, you're kind of doing it for the bigger game animal, for, I don't know, maybe like more. Cause I can't imagine that. I mean, you'd be proud. I guess I'd be proud if my dog got a groundhog too. But I mean, that just isn't like the reward that you'd be going for. Do these guys that do those meat dogs, do they deer hunt too? Or are they just houndsmen?
Oh no, they're good woodsmen. Yeah.
Cause it just seemed like a time thing.
Oh no. Yeah. The great thing is in West Virginia, we're very conservative with our game and gun laws, and you can run year round here. We don't have a specific training season. It's all year. Our kill seasons are, we have a pretty good amount of time to actually harvest the bears. I mean, so you have time. It takes away from in the fall. But, you know, like me, I'm a good example. I haven't got to run very much this year. So my dogs are out of shape. You know, they'll probably still catch a couple bear this December, but they're out of shape. And that's my fault because I'm focused on other stuff. Where these other guys, they're more focused on keeping their dogs in shape and running them and hunting. But they're all deer hunters, but they will focus more toward the hound side. And then if they get out and deer hunt, then, you know, okay, good deal. But their focus is mainly on hound hunting.
And so like when you say that they're good woodsmen, you know, the guys that are trappers, my one buddy that hunts coyotes, you know, I think that, you know, first of all, like from like a predator hunting and coyote hunting, like you're out there with a thermal and you're killing a lot of stuff. So you're behind the gun a lot and you're killing stuff, but you're seeing how deer move through the woods. You're seeing how animals move through the woods, not just the animals that you're going after, but you know, you're going to come upon a lot of stuff. So you're getting an opportunity. Like the more time you spend in the woods, you're just going to learn more about the outdoors, let alone, you know, just hunting, looking for deer tracks or scrapes or whatever.
Right. Look, the woodsmanship.
Right.
Like if you're out there, like doing
that's
it.
Right. Like I think you have deer hunters. I think you have coon hunters. I think you have bear hunters. But then I think you have woodsmen. And that's the guy that can do everything. If, you know, these guys trap, they deer hunt, they bear hunt, they hound hunt. I mean, we do, if there's a season in, we're doing it and successfully doing it. And if you get into if there's a survival situation, when I say a woodsman, it's a person that can go in the woods and adapt, and he's okay. And he's able to pass it along, that knowledge. And these guys that I've hunted with, I mean, they're good woodsmen.
So you're in an interesting situation because you were brought up you know, hunting a little bit, and then you got into that sort of woodsmanship stuff, like after the Marine Corps. It sounds like more so than when you were young. Well,
a whole lot more serious about it when I got out.
And then now you're bringing up your son in a day and age where, you know, Amazon will deliver something to you and next day or whatever, and you want instant gratification. You want to swipe on your phone and do all this stuff. So what are you doing? And I guess, how could you help guys like me with younger kids or whatever to instill more woodsmanship in the next future generations in this fast paced world?
Well, you have to give time to it, in my opinion. I mean, you have to want to pass it along. Like for me now, like I said before, I like killing stuff. For everybody knows me, I like to kill stuff, and I'll do that when I have time. But like 100% of my focus is if Brody wants to go learn how to build a fire, I'm going to go out there and teach him how to build a fire. If he wants to learn how to set up a tent, we're going to set up a tent. You know, I want to do those things rather than do something else, especially if he's interested in it and wants to learn it. If he wants to, you know, hell, in January and February, when we're just walking the dogs, I mean, yeah, we're walking the dogs, but Brody's asking about trees. You know, he's learning, you know, I think it's just to teach them when they want to be taught. I think you have to take that opportunity. I don't think you need to go pushing it down their throat. But like if Brody asked me, hey, what kind of tree is this? Well, then it just gets my mind racing. I talk about all the damn trees, not just that tree. I take that opportunity and we talk about all kinds of stuff. And I think that as parents, and this is my opinion, but I think the focus needs to be the kids, not the parent at that point, not your success, not your hunting. See the success in your eyes through your kid. Let them, you know, whether you kill anything or not, it's a successful hunt. You know, that's why we hunt. I mean, I hunt for the experiences, you know, whether I kill something or not. I mean, it's still great because you ain't doing nothing else. You're out in the woods. You know, you ain't working. There's no stresses out there. So you're winning either way, whether you harvest something or not, because you're getting a life experience. And I think that life experience is just priceless, especially for these kids that's in this fast pace, just like you said, just swiping. And when they can get out in the woods and just shit slows down, I think the 4 days we went to deer camp, we have no cell service there, no water, no electricity. I mean, it's pretty primitive. And he loved it. He wasn't chat snapping or whatever the hell these kids do. Or he wasn't TikToking or none of that shit. I mean, it was looking people in the eye and conversating with them and telling stories. And I think that's very important, for kids nowadays to go through that, because they just want to text and chat snap and all this shit, and they don't get real human interaction. So I think that life experience is huge.
Yeah, it's like, so my son, he just turned 19, so he's my youngest kid, and like I did like a youth hunt, but it was always just like, hey, you want to go? Yeah. So I'd bring him, and then like one of his first ones, I called him. He got the nickname Costco because I gave him his fanny pack. And I'm like, all right, we're going to be out there for a few hours. So we stopped and like pick out your snacks. So he's like, well, this and this, and, you know, like he had his fanny pack filled with snacks and Faygo pop and all this. And by like, I think 8:30, like everything was pretty much gone, you know. And then he's like, oh, and that was like it was opening day of gun season, actually. And he heard like a shot, like way off, like a few hundred yards. He's like, what? You know, I'm like, well, someone probably just shot a deer over there. He's like, we should go over there. I'm like, no, it don't work like that. They already shot the deer. Like, but then, you know, like a few minutes later, he's like, well, I just want to walk over that way a little bit. I'm like, all right, well, go ahead. You know, like it was all about him. And yeah. Then when he was ready to go, I'm like, hey, well, that's, can we go? Like,
but I think the interesting part about it is like, we did our deer camp with the Patreons this year, and John's like, hey, Jet, you like, you need to come. And he's just turned 19. He's like, nah, I don't know, you know.
Well, he started college and stuff. He's like, I got homework and stuff. I haven't shot my bow. But that was like what I was leading up to is, so he hunted with me like for, he started bow hunting, and it was like a, not a pressure thing. Like the only thing I pressured him, like, if you're going to bow hunt, you got to put in your time and you got to practice.
I agree with that.
You owe it to the animal. If you're going to go out there and try to kill him, that you need to be proficient with your equipment. And yep. So, and that was one of the things, like we'd go out and shoot our bow and then we'd, you know, screw around, or like he shot leagues with us and, you know, he'd get down. And then like the one time Adam's like, hey, if you Robin Hood your dad's arrow, I'll give you $100. Well, then it was like a game, like, oh, and he didn't do it that night, but the next week he did perfect Robin Hood. And he looks at Adam, he's like, yeah. Well, that was last week. You know? but then, you know, like he's, you know, in his junior and senior year of high school, he was playing football and he, you know, so he didn't really have time in the fall to go hunt. So, but, and I didn't pressure him like, hey, we'd still take a weekend. Like it was always like my birthday weekend, like in November, we'd go up to my buddy's cabin and it was like, it was more just to get away and decompress, you know, yeah. Go out and we'd go dink around. We'd go, you know, I'd walk him through the woods and tell him what I'm looking at. And but it was like, we'd stop and we'd get Mountain Dew and Oreo cookies. And we'd always go to this one restaurant and it was all about the experience, you know? And then, but then, like I said, his junior, senior year, he had too much stuff going on. He didn't really get to hunt. So then this year though, you know, he graduated in the spring and then he's going to college. And I'm like, hey, it was actually his birthday weekend. I'm like, well, just come up and hang out. You know, oh, I haven't shot my bow. I'm like, I might not even hunt myself. Like, but let's just go up and have fun. There's going to be a ton of guys. And so he come up and he had a bunch of homework to do, but then he hung out at the fire. And he, like on Saturday, like that got him incentivized. He was like, he shot his bow all day Saturday. And I had a doe. I could have shot a doe the night before. And he's like, well, I'm going to go hunt. I'm like, all right. So we went out and got like walking him out in the spot, telling him like, this is, you know, the runway. This is where the deer are moving through. And I think we need to go back here. And sure enough, we get up in the tree, deer come through like right away. But it like sparked his interest again. And so then I actually was flying out to Montana the next weekend. And he's like, Dad, I gave him all, I have, you know, obviously I have a bunch of saddles and stuff, gave him all my equipment, extra equipment. And he drove all the way back up there on his own and got all set up, found the tree and everything. He was all excited. He was going to hunt there and then drive up to our property, which was like actually farther. He could have just drove home. It would have been closer, but his plan was to go sleep at our property in his car and then go hunt again. He found the tree, got all set up, and like 15 minutes into the sit, started pouring down rain and got soaked. But the whole thing was, it like, I never forced him into it, but now he was, you know, wanting to do it more and more. And
yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that's how I got Brody to start turkey hunting with me, was what you just said about practicing. He was wanting a turkey hunt. I said, are you wanting to kill a turkey or just go hunting with me? Cause you can observe. He's like, no, he said, I want to shoot. I said, okay. Cause he never liked guns. His ears were sensitive. And I said, but in order to go turkey hunting, we got to go out and shoot a shotgun. You got to shoot it. And he went out and shot it. And I gave him, he was 14. So he was 10 then, 11. And I gave him Mossberg 935, 3.5 inch, right off the bat. And he shot it. And he's like, oh, gosh. And I was like, wasn't too bad, was it? He's like, yeah. He said, it hurt. I said, yeah. I said, them son of bitches kill on both ends. I said, here, shoot this shell. And then I choked him down to his 20 gauge that got set up for him. And I said, you're never going to shoot a gun worse than that Mossberg 935, 3.5 inch. And from then on, you know, he's done it. But then last year, bow hunting, I let him, you know, he shot a little bit, but he missed like 5 deer last year. So this year, when we got our bows, he shoots at least 3 or 4 days a week. If he has 2 hours between school and practice, like, he's shooting, and it's paid off for him. You know, he killed his first archery deer, a real nice 10 point the first day of the season this year. And I was like, that is the payoff for practicing and putting your time in. And he's learned that. And I'm a firm believer in what you said, that if you are going to hunt, then you need to become proficient.
Yep.
With it, because you owe it to the animal that you're hunting.
Yep.
Well, and that's the thing too, is like with shooting your bows, it's really easy to make it fun. I mean, like my daughter, you know, she's like, Dad, can we go turkey hunting? So I got to get the blind out, set it up in the backyard. And I got one of those foam turkey decoys, and she shoots her bow at the turkey, and then she pretends like she's filming it, and she's like, all right, we got to track it. We're going out and doing this. And it's like, but, you know, I could be inside in the Barbie dream house or whatever, curled up in that sucker. So it's like, you know, if that's what she wants to do, and that's what, like, exactly what you said, if that's what she's interested in, then, you know, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know? But like John says, and, you know, we'll probably get some shit for this because it's just what it is. But like, nobody ever says, hey, I want to go shoot my crossbow, Dad. They don't. They say, I want to shoot my bow. Like, you go out and shoot your bow a whole bunch, but you can make a couple shots with your crossbow when you're done. Oh, sight it in like a gun, you know, and that's just the way it goes.
It is. I mean, I think I don't have no problem with crossbows if they're legal. You know, go do your thing. But I think you ought to own it. If you're going to be a crossbow hunter, don't say you're a bow hunter. Mm-hmm. I think you should say, I'm a crossbow hunter.
Yeah.
Because you're not a bow hunter if you're hunting with a crossbow. I will say it, and that's my opinion. I have no issues with crossbows. But I think you ought to identify as a crossbow hunter.
Exactly.
but like I say, like I got no problem with it, especially like for my daughter. Like if she was like really wanted to go hunt and you know, I think there's a place for everything. And I think as long as, like you say, as long as you own it, and that's, you know, your thing. And I think the other side of that is just like the bow hunting. Like, you got to be proficient with it. You got to shoot it and sight it in and make sure that it's on, and not treat it as a gun. And you, just because Raven says you can shoot them out to 100 yards and pop balloons, that doesn't mean that you can make that shot, you know. I mean,
right. Well, I think that crossbows have their place. If you're introducing an individual to the outdoors, and it's a type of individual that has to have success to see it, to feel it, I think crossbows are great for youngsters. I think crossbows are great when you get to the top end of your ages to keep our older generations in the woods instead of them just quitting and saying, oh, I can't pull a bow back no more. I think that crossbows are a great tool to give the old timers an option to be in the woods. And then for all your disabled people that need a crossbow, hey, I'm 100% for it. But I don't think in between there that you should be in the woods with a Raven crossbow that shoots 100 yards and shooting 550 feet per second. I don't.
Right.
So, but.
The bow question?
No, I mean, since we're talking about bows.
So, one of the questions I always ask our guests is, what is your bow? Yeah. What bow are you shooting right now? What's your setup?
I shoot a Matthews V3X, I think it's the 33, and it's 75 pound limbs. I shoot about a 530 grain arrow, I shoot Black Eagle arrows. Spartans that they have, they hit really hard. And then I'm a mechanical guy. So I shoot, I've got several different mechanicals in my quiver. You know, they all fly pretty well the same.
Yeah.
But that's pretty well my setup. You know, I shoot a one pin sight, and I have for several years now, because I feel like I can focus in long range shots a lot better.
Yeah.
Spotting and stalking is why I like the one pin, because I used to have a bad habit with a five pin sight, and I would put all the pins on the deer and say, okay, it's going to hit. Well, that's not the damn case. You know, I'd lose my focus with, you know, a 3, 4, 5 pin, and my shots. I never was a guy that practiced a lot. I always just went out and hunted and missed a lot of deer. I've wounded more deer since shooting a lot than I have before, but I missed a lot before. I went to a thumb release 3 years ago, and that changed my shooting probably 5 or 6 fold. It helped me out going from a caliper trigger release to a thumb release, and then shooting it the correct way instead of, you know, punching the trigger, rolling. And it helped my shooting out tremendously. And plus, I shoot a lot more now. I mean, I feel completely confident in going out and shooting a whitetail if it's the right situation, not a steep angle. But I'd shoot a whitetail at 70 yards right now on a spot and stalk. But we shoot a lot.
Right.
But that's kind of my setup. I mean, I like the bows we're shooting. I've always shot Matthews. Never had a partnership with them until this year. And I've shot them, except for a stint with Bear. I've shot a Hoyt before. But I've always, for some reason, Matthews kind of got the market share in West Virginia.
That's the bow I'm shooting this year too, is the V3X 3375. Yeah.
I was going to go with the 29, and I have a 29 also, but I really like that 33.
Yeah.
So going to the thumb release, do you think it was just like a form thing, like you said, shooting it the correct way, or what do you think was the big like tipping point from a caliper to the thumb release?
Well, I think for me, it makes me concentrate and be focused in my, you know, everybody has their own different shot process, but for my process, I feel like as soon as I get pulled back, you know, I'm already rolling. I shoot pretty quick, so I'm already rolling my hand. So as soon as my pin is set and I've gone through my process of leveling up, anchoring, everything the same, then I, you know, the shot's going off for me. It helped me focus to get my pin set on the target as fast as possible, because I'm shooting, I'm letting it go. Well, it's going as soon as it rolls. I don't really know when it's going to go, but as soon as I finish rolling out, you know, it just gave me more of a focus. And the way I practice, like we have targets here in our yard, and I don't shoot at, like, we shoot, I have stations at 20, 30, 40, 50, 60. But once our pins are set, and this is something that, you know, Brody enjoys, I have like 6 or 7 targets set up throughout the yard, and we just walk and shoot all unknown yardages, different targets, And that's how we practice. I mean, we range them just like because we use a rangefinder hunting, but we'll stop and we'll range and shoot. But you have to get shot off in 30 seconds between ranging it and shooting it.
That's good practice, yeah.
And we might shoot one target at 40 yards and stay in the same spot and range the target behind us and have to, you know, we shoot different, you know, turning our bodies and from our knees and everything. And it makes it interesting for him, and it's great practice.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be a lot of situations that we're in.
And what thumb release did you end up going with? What are you shooting?
I shoot the True Ball Fang 4.
Okay.
Is what I shoot. And then Brody went with he started off with a Fang 4. But now I'm thinking he's shooting a B3 release now.
Okay.
And he likes it. But I still shoot the Fang 4.
And that Fang 4, you can't hang on your D loop, right? Because it's just got the one hook, right?
Oh, no, you can.
Okay. So I was wondering
you have the slide that closes it up.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I'm hunting my releases, I keep it on my D loop. You know,
yeah.
Even when I'm ground hunting, it's there hanging. It has the option to put it on your wrist, but I don't like. I'm always grabbing my binos, and when it's on my wrist, it hits my binos, and it'll make that not a tink noise, but that thud. Yeah. So I just keep it clipped on my bow, and then, you know, when you get into a setting that you're hunting, every time I stop, I'm pulling my bow back every time. I mean, because I've had some screw ups where I've got into setups and said, okay, I'm good here. But then a deer come and I raise my bow and I hit a damn limb and it tinks and he runs off. You know,
yep.
A lot of mistakes are made on the ground, and you learn every day. I mean, hunt with Zach this week taught me more, but it's all about trying to read the deer, man. You know, letting them tell you what you can and can't do depending on their mood. Like, he shot at the deer, and we kind of critique ourselves. He shot at a deer that was looking at him, but was with two does. Didn't really know what they were. I was filming from a distance, and he had the cameraman with him, and he thought that if he didn't get that shot off then, that he wasn't going to get a shot, and that deer was not going to go anywhere. The does didn't see him. That deer's not going to run, but he shot when the deer was looking at him, and hell, the deer jumped the arrow by, hell, I'd bet you 3 feet. on video, it looks like. But it's just learning that stuff. The thumb release helped me out tremendously shooting. That was a big, big plus for me.
It's interesting because I feel like a lot of people get intimidated. I mean, my brother, for example, you know, he missed a really nice buck, but first thing he did, you know, shot it all summer long, pulls back on a great buck and punched himself right in the nose. And I mean, he was telling the story last night, and he said that I used to shoot a thumb release, but punched myself in the nose on a big 10 point. And
so he went back to
the wrist release. Cause
I think Brody, I think he'll go to a back tension in spring. And he's been shooting with it this fall, but I wouldn't let him hunt with it. And I don't think he would hunt with it either, because he's not comfortable with it, but he shoots with it a lot. But I think that he'll, I've never shot a back tension and won't, because, you know, I'm happy just thumb release, but I think he'll go to a back tension and start next year. He's all into it. You know, I'm more the just trying to teach him, but I don't know about, I don't know if I could change even if I screwed up with thumb release, because I know that it makes me shoot better. even if I break my nose with it, you know.
Yeah, I almost did that with my hinge release. About
broke yeah.
my nose off my face, felt like.
Well, Brody's put a couple arrows in the sheetrock.
Yeah.
Yeah, I put one through the...
Off the, his hinge.
Yeah. Right through to. The no broadhead sign at the at our Bowman's Club. So,
that's, John does a lot of the maintenance and stuff there, and it was stuck in the light fixture the arrow was.
That didn't even break the ball, but went through the metal. There's like a... So a like right above our target bank on the ceiling is a big metal sign. And it's like a triangle and it says no broadheads. And it was like, I had shot probably close to 150 arrows. I was tuning my bow and,
Jesus.
And, I was sighting it in, tuning it, doing all that. And then I set my sight tape and I like, it was late. It was probably 11 o'clock at night and in the club, it's 50 yards or like almost 55, but you got to be back by the bathroom. And there's signs like no shooting from the kitchen and no shooting from the bathroom, you know. But I'm back by the bathrooms and I drew back. And that same thing, I had changed, like I was shooting a back tension and my thumb release and my hinge. And I don't know what I did, but I drew back and all of a sudden it was like, boom, and it goes off. And it was just like, pow, right? I'm like, holy shit. I go down there and it's like stuck through and went all the way through both sides of the metal sign and then through the light fixture edge. And it was like the tip was almost touching the bulb.
Oh shit.
But
man,
there.
So is Michigan, is there, do you all gun hunt?
We have, well, I don't gun hunt.
Or do you all just strictly archery?
Pretty much just bow hunt. Like last year, I brought my daughter up north.
Yeah.
And I gun hunted for the first time in a couple years. And I missed two does. I missed one at 30 yards. And I went back and sighted in my rifle. And I missed a doe, another doe at like 90.
This is
and I killed an elk in Colorado on a drop camp with my dad, and I bow hunted. It was rifle season, it was first rifle. I went out and I bow hunted for 5 days, didn't get an opportunity, or 4 days. Last day, I said, I didn't bring a rifle. I said, I'm going to borrow somebody's rifle, and I'm going to kill one. And I shot this elk at 265 yards with a rifle I'd never even held before, but now with my rifle I can't hit a doe at 30 yards. Like, oh my, it's just terrible. But basically we basically only bow hunt, you know.
Yeah. Do you like it? Are you hunting public or private in Southeast Ohio?
Public.
Okay,
everything's basically, well, my family's got 240 acres in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. But it's quicker for me to get to Ohio than it is to go up there. So like, that's why I chose to go to Ohio over Thanksgiving.
It's what, like 8 hour drive?
Yeah. It's like 8 hours to get up there. And that, you know, there's not real big deer or anything like that. Like I grew up with like what you're talking about with like a deer camp. Like now there's satellite TV and power up there, but still an outhouse. But when I used to go up there as a kid, it was kerosene lights and we had water, but not too many years before that, they used to have to go to like the city hall and pump water and bring it in. Yeah.
I mean, we take our, we used to have an outhouse. We use handicapped chairs now with commode seats on them.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Go wherever the landmines aren't. Yeah.
Yep.
That, see, we hunted public there for, I've had a, not an advantage, but a lot of these lands that I hunt on, I've reclaimed through my company and working for the mine company. And then I worked for the actual coal company before I started my company. But the public land in the Southern Four has just got overwhelmed with people. I don't know if it's, you know, where we videoed so much in 18 and 19. and showed the deer we were killing and videoing. But like, and then there's no, really no land. Everything in West Virginia is owned by land companies. We have public land, but compared to other states, we have very little public land. And so we have, I have a lease now, that I focus on, and we still go to public in early season, but like once the rut hits, I mean, there's 8 or 10 vehicles at every parking lot on our public land, you know, in our area. So these land companies have started leasing their land to pay, at least pay their taxes and expenses. And they've never done that before. And I end up, you know, to bear hunt, you got to have some property, you know, and a lot of property we were bear hunting was getting taken up by hunting leases. So I ended up taking a lease upon myself and for bear hunting. That's what we were focused on. But now it's like, man, we need, this is our area, deer hunting, everything. It's getting so bad trying to find a place to hunt.
Yeah, Michigan's got a ton of public land here. I mean, it's.
But the gun season is, I mean, that's, you know, a lot of, the Orange Army is what we call it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, I think it's just kind of scary. Like, and our gun, like where we're at, we're like right on the edge of the rifle and the shotgun line. So, and pretty much all the public land that we hunt is in the rifle zones. So you got guys out there, you know, shooting like, well, I grew up shooting a seven millimeter mag. I mean, you know, you can reach out and touch some shit with that.
AT&T.
Exactly. And so it's a little scary to go out and hunt public land with, you know, with all the Orange Army out there for us.
Our Orange Army is strong, but it's nothing like PA, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio. It's nothing like that. I mean, I bet you Birdie and I didn't hear 20 shots the first morning or the first day. Yeah. You know, just it, but we've only got, you know, 1.7 million people in the whole state. You know, so population is pretty low. And I'd say that I'm not sure on residential sales, but I'd say there might be a 250,000 hunters, you know, in the whole state, maybe a little more.
Yeah, I thought the last numbers for Michigan was like around 500,000, 600,000 licensed sold.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. But, John grew up hunting public land, and I grew up just going up to our deer camp, you know, and that was hunting. And then, so John's my wife's cousin. So when I got into their family, like my father-in-law is like Grizzly Adams. And so everything was public. And so all our bow hunting is public. And it just, honestly, now I look at it as having that mindset as like, outside of the whole gun thing, just being like a blessing. Cause it's like with like what you're talking about, even with the spot and stock and the walk around hunting, you know, it's like, you need some property to do that. If you got 40 acres, like that ain't shit, you know, like you can only walk so far, you know, and, you know, in the bow season, you know, if you run into somebody, you can just go somewhere else, like just move, you know, that just in having that mindset, like I said, I think is a blessing instead of, you know, I grew up hunting where, and my brother and I were just talking about it yesterday, but you know, you go in 240 acres seems like a lot. And then you get 6, 8, 10 guys on there and none of them care about the wind or access or anything. So, you know, and the deer know where you're at walking in, or you're riding your four wheeler right to the stand and they say, well, the deer don't care. Well, yeah. Well, why haven't we killed a buck or a big buck ever or in, you know, 10 years or whatever. It's like those deer know what's going on. And so even there, like nice piece of property, you know, lots of people would kill for 240 acres. But if you got a guy hunting here and a guy hunting here and a guy hunting here and the wind is from here, like you're just kind of like what you're talking about. You better enjoy just being in the woods because you ain't going to see a deer or nothing.
Well, you ought to. You're in that situation. You ought to hunt the hunter.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to figure out the deer, just figure out what everybody else is doing and let them ruin their spots for you.
Right. And
you can be successful doing hunting the hunter. I mean, if that makes sense. I mean, you're not, I don't want anybody thinking that Josh is out there hunting people. But if you're hunting the hunter and you know where they're at, it can be your advantage.
Yeah.
Well, that's like my one brother is a good hunter. My other brother is a great guy. Oh, but he likes to not go to work and just be in the woods. He's like, I'm not into it like you guys are. But my brother and I can walk in there and find deer, no problem. You know, pretty much no matter where anybody's hunting. But everybody else is like, you know, they go to this stand and they don't see anything. They don't care about the wind. Then they go over to this stand. That's not any better, and they don't see anything there, and there's like there's no deer here, and it's like, well, the deer are there, like you're just in a bad spot, you know. But these guys aren't mobile hunters. They don't have any, you know, idea of like, you know, they're of the mindset of, you know, John shot a big buck over here 1 year, so it's a good spot, and you know, we always see deer over here, so that's a good spot. But it isn't because of they went that's out atypical, and looked to see what they're doing. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that's atypical of deer hunters or hunters. I mean, over the years, you hear stories that well, Jim Bob killed one over on this point in 1985. You ought to probably go up there and hunt. You know, that's typical.
Kind of sounds like Justin's story from the Florida guy. Like, we just had a guy on the podcast 2 weeks ago, and he come all the way up from Florida, and he ended up staying like a mile from my property up north. And that hunting camp was there. They've been doing it since like the 70s, late 70s. And him and his buddy came up from Florida. They did all this e-scouting, and they ended up killing the biggest buck they've ever killed in camp. These guys coming up from Florida to the guys up here in Michigan's camp. But those guys, you know, and he's like, it was a great, great freaking camp. Like, all the guys were cool as hell, but they just all did like the same thing. They had their ladder stand or this tree. They all did the same, basically the same stuff. And, you know, they're there for the, you know, camaraderie and, you know, the camp. But it's just cool story. It's the difference between the hunters, you know, like your style hunting. And what's funny is I've been working on getting my house going, and my buddy Jason, who I used to hunt with all the time, and he's a great hunter. And we're talking about how his spot, like, you know, the guys would move in, and he's like, that don't bother me none, because I know where they're at now, and I know what the deer are going to do when those guys are there. He's said the same thing. Like, I hunt the hunter. Like, I like knowing where they're at. When those guys come in, the deer, I know how the deer move through that area, and I know what they're going to do now. They're not going to go by him, you know?
That's right.
So they might once, but that guy's just going to go in and sit no matter what the wind's doing. Like, you know, he's going to sit there, and then he's going to push those deer over, and, he's, you know, I'll figure it out from there.
Yeah. Yeah, I could be in a tree for 2 hours and see a deer, and I'd get down and go after it. But you got to have room to do that.
Yeah. Well,
so
that's
not found. So you're not disrespecting or found somebody else up.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it's a blessing to have the mindset of like, now I can move, or I can go, or I can just go find something else. And, you know, for the longest time, like, you know, we talked about the being on the ground and moving, but I always thought like I was committed, you know, like I had to be there. Like, this was the spot. And it's like, no, the deer have a say. Like, the deer want to be where they want to be. Like, they don't have to come by you. You can't wish them to come by you. Like, you have to go and make something happen at some point.
That's kind of like my, you know, growing up, my dad was he killed a shit ton of deer, but it was like, we couldn't shoot does. We could only shoot bucks, spike horn, whatever. If it had horns, it was, you know, it was okay to open shoot. Game. But it was, okay, go get in that tree. And he had, like, thousands of trees. Like, but it was, you get in the tree and you stay there, you know?
Yeah.
And then, and that was, like, that was kind of, like, burned into my head. And then my brother, he is, like, a whole different breed. Like, he just did his own shit. And he'd go up and then get in a tree and be like, ah, I seen the deer coming from over there. So I got down, moved over there. I'm like, what, in the middle of a sit? Well, and he kills a 20-inch freaking 10-pointer. Like, yeah, well, I got to go where the deer are at. Like, they, I seen three other bucks go through that same spot. That's where they're moving.
Yeah, well, that's – I think that's the misconception with a lot of hunters is, I mean, number one rule, you got to be where the deer are.
Right.
You know, you might see them where you're at, but, and it's okay if you want to bird watch, but like if I see deer and I'm not in the spot, I'm going to that spot. Yeah. It doesn't matter if it's in the middle of the sit, I've only been there an hour, whatever. I'm getting out and moving, and it doesn't bother me a bit. Because I think that just like you were saying, Adam, I mean, you can be in the woods as much as you want, but you have to do everything in your power to get the odds in your favor to create that opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think aggressive tactics, they pay off. They create opportunity. You will get opportunity. You might not be that day. You might foul it up. But at some point, it will pay off and it will all come together.
Yeah, you're learning from your mistakes. You learn, oh, I got away with it, or I didn't get away with it. Now I can try something different.
But I think what you said earlier, Josh, was something that like a lot of young hunters, and we talk about a lot of just saying like, you know, you got to get a few under your belt and you don't want the biggest buck of your life, you know, and you're trying to figure it out. But like what you were saying about being on the ground and like figuring out what the deer will allow you to do, you know, there's so much that you can get away with, you know, and then there's certain scenarios where you absolutely can't, you know,
that's exactly right.
And like, I think about it, like, that last video that you had, right. You know, where you killed that big buck, but that doe's right behind you and you're like FaceTiming somebody or videoing it like over your shoulder,
yeah.
You know, and that deer allowed you to do that. But then there's going to be other days that deer's going to be in that exact same spot. But maybe there was a tink or there was something on your gear that was flapping in the wind. And she's keyed in on you and you can't do that. And, yeah. But you have to have those situations to know when you can do that and when you can't, you know?
I mean, when that, when the buck came down off the hill, you know, they were absolutely dogging this doe. And right before I'd shot him, after I shot the deer, I was like, there goes that hot doe. She came in that bush where I was FaceTiming, not, I was videoing that doe behind me earlier in the afternoon. And you can see that bush and that pawpaw tree right there. And there's an autumn. That doe ran in that autumn olive and we could see her butt. And she was just sitting there shivering. I think she was just completely like wore down, but she was the hot doe. And when that buck came off, I thought that he was going to go to her, but I guess he lost her when got down there with all those other deer and he turned and came in front of me. But that hot doe didn't take off till 2 or 3 minutes after the shot. And that place was so hot that, you know, we got out of the tree and went down to meet Zach. And when we came back up, I was like, I just got another picture. And I looked and a 10-point was at that scrape. After I'd shot. I mean, even when we were tracking my deer, I mean, there was deer running all in that thicket around us. And we were taking pictures and everything. I mean, that's how hot that area was. I mean, I've not had very many hunts like that. I bet you we heard 25 or 30 snort wheezes that afternoon. And like, I probably hadn't heard that many in my life.
And you said that there was another buck that was bigger than that one, or that was right in that same class?
Yeah. And we saw him run earlier. There was three bucks in there. I mean, we've put restrictions in place on our lease. Because last year, the first 2 years that I had the lease, it was kind of like, as long as it's Pope and Young, you can shoot it. Well, that's not the right thing to do. Because we killed a lot of deer that were 130, 135 inch, which are great deer. I'm not saying that, but it's not what we have the lease for. I mean, the lease that we have and the property has potential to really, really get big deer. And so we have size restrictions. Several people commented on YouTube why I didn't shoot that first 10 point that came in. It was 130 inch deer. But we have 150 inch minimums on our lease for anything over 8 point. 8 points got to score 140.
Well, that's I was having the same question, not on that deer so much as I think it was a video before that where the other guy, he passed just a beautiful buck, and then he shoots the other one. He's like, that's one we're after. And I feel like sometimes when you have that angle from the tree, like you don't get like the full idea of like what that, because when he came up on that deer and you guys recovered it, it was like, oh my God, that's a freaking monster. But it didn't look that much bigger than the one that he passed, you know?
Right.
And that deer, you know, the deer that you shot, like if that was 130 inch deer with that flyer on the back, I think many people would be hard pressed not to shoot that deer at, you know.
No, I would be hard pressed not to.
Right.
If I wasn't on the lease with the rules, anywhere else I'd shoot it. But we put those restrictions in place and it's, you know, hopefully it'll pay off, you know, because we have a bunch of 130-inch, 120-inch deer running around. And we've gone from killing 14, 15 Pope and Young bucks on a lease a year to, I think there's been five, you know, 150-plus-inch deer killed this year.
So, like I say, we're public land mainly.
Yeah.
But my question is, like, in that scenario, like, let's say you've got like an incredible lease, right? And you're doing all this management and you're saying, okay, we're not going to shoot these bucks. You know, we got 13 bucks that are up and comers or whatever. Like, how do you structure your lease or whatever for like your protection so that they don't just lease it out to the next highest bidder or somebody sees like, you know, you're all over YouTube. Somebody sees like, oh, that's where they're at. I got deep pockets. I'm just going to come in and get it. Like, how do you protect yourself? Or like, do you worry about that?
Nah, I don't worry about it. I mean, I never have thought about it.
Sorry.
If that's the case, that's the case. You know, I don't think that, I'll bank on my relationship with the land company.
Okay. Yeah. Like I say, cause that's like the first thing that comes to mind, you know, cause as soon as you have a piece of property or somewhere that people find out that there's big deer, you know, then, oh, there's going to be people, you know, sniffing at your doorstep saying, okay, well, how do I mean, you see it with the hunting public, you see it with, you know, all these guys and they catch a lot of crap because they're showing off where they're at and all this stuff. But in a money game, right? Public land's public land. Like, you know, people can get pissed, whatever. But there's always somebody with more money, man. Like, that's what I'd be, like, so freaking worried about, especially with them. You know, you put in restrictions, you're showing deer that you're passing that are huge like that. It's like, Man, I'd be nervous as hell.
It is what it is. I don't put much thought into it. If somebody comes in and takes it, I'll just go hunt somewhere else.
So, how many guys do you have in your lease with you?
There's 24.
24. So this is a big chunk of property.
Yeah, that's a decent chunk. But it's tough. I mean, I still go on public. It just depends on where the deer are, where I'm seeing them. You know, the lease is a great place to be able to run dogs and not have issues.
Yeah.
Crossing property lines and other bear hunting groups, because it's got more and more popular. We used to be the only group in southern West Virginia that ran bears for years. Now everybody, you know, it seems like everybody's got a dog box and running. So that's the whole, you know, plan behind the lease is having a place to run the dogs and not having issues.
And, you know, if it don't hurt the deer hunting and the deer there, I mean, you got it.
Yeah.
You're paying for it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so it works out.
So, I guess we can kind of wrap stuff up here. Like, so what's the future for Untamed? Like, what stuff do you guys got coming up?
Grinding, man. That's the only thing we know how to do.
And you're now,
man, we, you know, we'll finish up bow season, you know, New Year's Eve. And then probably go mountain lion hunting in January, February. And then turkey season will start, you know, late March for us.
And most of your stuff is in real time, right?
Yeah, it's we're like right now we've got a backlog, but we're within 10 days. You know, we're probably a little bit further out than that because the video stacked up during the rut on us. We had a lot of good content, a lot of good action, and killed a few deer. So, I mean, we're a little bit behind right now, but it's semi, you know, that YouTube semi real time. I mean, we've put out more whitetail content this year than we ever have. We've been putting out two videos a week since the third week of September.
So when you guys switch into the mountain lion, where do you guys, do that in the same area? Or?
No. We go out west.
I was going to say, you got to go out west. I'm like, there's no mountain lion in West Virginia, right?
Zero. I probably had flat for that, but yeah, I think there's zero. There's a hide and seek champion.
So like, and then like the wild boar, or like, you know.
Yeah.
Now, is that like a open year? Is there a season?
No. They're actually you know, wild boar. They were brought into Logan and Boone County in the late 70s for the coal miners. The deer populations were down so bad that they brought in their Eurasian wild boars, what they are. And they brought them in to just a few areas for the coal miners to have something to hunt, because the deer populations were so low. But they strived, you know, they've strived in those areas. They did really good. And then I don't know what happened, like in 2003, 2004, 2005, it's like they, a bunch of them died off. And then they made a, you know, a resurgence, and now the population's pretty good. And, you know, there's a few hogs around. But that's why they brought them into the area. I mean, and it's like, you know, feral hogs, everybody talks about them down south in Texas and everywhere. And they just go everywhere. They just reproduce like rabbits, and they're everywhere. Like the areas that they stock these wild boar in, they don't leave those areas. It's crazy. Like, they're not all over Logan. They're just in certain parts, certain drainage systems of Logan. Okay. They're not all they're not all over the place in Boone County. They're just in certain areas where they got stocked. I mean, it's kind of wild how they have not migrated outside of these areas. So, but they, you know, they have a bow season that's always open, and they have a late firearm season in February.
Okay.
And it's only the residents. That's the only animal in West Virginia that non-residents aren't allowed to hunt.
Okay.
So
that sucks. I was thinking, man, that's a lot shorter drive than Texas or somewhere.
they're fun. They're real fun.
Until they chase you down.
Yeah. All I had to do was all I had to do was outrun Greg Godfrey. So he got little short steps, and that's all I was. I said I just got past him. I passed him, and he went, "Oh shit!" Because that hog was right on my heels. So I don't know if y'all heard. I mean, I blew my knee completely out getting chased by one that last spring turkey season, his last day, and got Greg Godfrey from Tethered was with me. So yeah, they get aggressive, but that's my fault. I induced that myself. It happens sometimes.
So where can everybody follow along with the Untamed and you guys are pretty much as two videos a week, video a week. So you guys are going strong.
Yeah, and that it'll continue because we'll start dropping bear content first of the year up to turkey season. And you can check us out on YouTube, find us on Instagram, Facebook. We no longer have a TikTok account. We're banned for life. They don't like dogs and bears in the same video. So we got our last strikes and they banned us, which is no big deal. But yeah, just check us out and leave us comments, subscribe. That's pretty much what we do.
Yeah, and I'll say this, like, if you want to see like what it's all about, watch that bear video, whatever it says, you know, best bear video you'll ever see. And then the last video that they posted, the most recent one where Josh kills this freak of a buck, the excitement in his voice and his reaction and everything, you'll be hooked. So thanks for coming on tonight and cutting up with us for a little bit.
Dude, I appreciate it, man. Good luck the rest of the season.
Yeah, no problem. You too.